Welcome to the Teen Life Podcast, where we explore your questions to help you make meaningful connections with teenagers, because no teen deserves to feel alone. Have a question you'd like us to address? Email us at podcast@teenlife.ngo. Now, let's jump into this week's question. How can schools and parents help teens build real-world coping skills? So today's conversation honestly came out of, I read the book, The Anxious Generation by Jonathan Haidt, and we talked about social media with Sarah Brooks already this season. So we kind of wanted to focus a little bit on this conversation around the anxious generation, but from the perspective of resilience and how do we help our teenagers develop these skills? Because really, resilience is not just a personality trait. It's a learned skill that we can help develop in our teenagers. And so part of our job as adults is to help them fail, is to help them face challenges while they're with us. Tobin, I feel like you said this the other day, just in the context of parenting, of you want your kids to experience things in a safe place where you are there to help them instead of just throwing them out there with no experience. And so
yeah, it was about my older son dating. I was like, I don't want him to be dating the first time when he's in college without a safety net of home and someone to talk to. And so yeah, that's kind of that same thing of just like, it's kind of like training wheels. You want them to have life training wheels when there's still a parent behind them, making sure they don't, you know, bust their head open. So,
right. Well, and just that, I think we'll get into this of what is causing this anxiety trend for this anxious generation. And I think one of the biggest things is overprotection, that we try to shield our students. And I did pull one quote from Anxious Generation because I think this one really kind of sums up a big problem that this youth generation is facing. And it says, overprotection in the real world and underprotection in the virtual world are the major reasons why children born after 1995 became the anxious generation. So this idea that we got way overprotective of, if you're playing outside by yourself, you will probably be kidnapped or you'll probably get hit by a car and die. And so we locked down and handed them screens, handed them devices, handed them things that felt safer, but we didn't give them any sort of guidelines on what that looks like or how that should be used. And so we're seeing that now with overprotection in physical world, digital overload. They are just bombarded. I think we've talked about this so many times on this podcast, but even in a way that I didn't grow up, they can never turn it off.
Yeah.
They are always reachable.
Yeah. I think like that overprotection stems out of, I mean, on both sides, right? Parents being always connected because of this new technology, because of the whole world being connected in a way it never has and maybe never should have been, where you're seeing everything, every bad possibility, every bad thing in the world that's happening. Sure, along with the videos of the cute puppies and everything, but you're seeing that. And so it's easy to make the jump to, well, I don't want that to be me. And so you see that on the side of the parents. But I mean, on the other side of the students, they're going through the same thing where they're seeing everything in their world and in their context. It's a little different than an adult, but they're connected to everything and are just as scared and maybe anxious as you. But you're also setting this example without even knowing that this is how we respond to those things, is by locking down, is by becoming anxious. And so I think it's a great thing to be aware of and a great conversation to start on both sides, really.
Yeah. So this is a loaded situation, but we can talk about some coping tools and how to deal with this. And the first thing really is just kind of teaching them problem solving steps, like asking them what's the problem and then what are your options and what are your first steps for that? Because the other part of this situation is we want instant gratification in everything we do. That includes fixing our problems. And sometimes that's not how that goes. Sometimes you do have to take a step first and take it slow and take it easily, or else you're not going to get where you need to go. And then also just kind of reframing our thoughts, shifting from I failed, I'm terrible, to this is practice, not perfection. And that is something that I think drives the biggest wedge in teens and adults lately, is that they do have to expect perfection and they put it on themselves too. And a lot of kids, and mine was guilty of this, my oldest was guilty of this too, of instead of doing something not well and learning from it, they would just not do it because they didn't want to be not perfect at it. And so that's what I see a lot in teens these days. Stress reducing habits, movement, sleep, creative outlets, unplugged downtime, that we've talked about that ad nauseum, just not being in not putting yourself in anxious situations. Supportive peer relationships, friends who listen, encourage, and challenge in healthy ways. And that's, you know, that's it. It's always important to have supportive peers. And then also a safe environment to test and gain confidence, like whether that's school clubs, volunteering, sports, like even just like at home, some things that you can do to kind of give them some responsibility. One of the best things I've seen in my teen lately is he got his first job, which is kind of a dinky little cashier's job. But it kind of instilled this thing in him that he finally had a place to show that, oh, I know where to go to earn money. I'm doing these things and I'm having responsibility. I'm getting up and taking myself to work. It's made my kid mature in a way that I haven't really seen before. Not that, you know, and he's a boy. Boys mature slower than girls a lot of times. But that's one of those things where if you're worried about putting your kid out there in that setting, you're taking that away from them. You're taking away from them the chance to show maturity and kind of, you know, scrape their knee a little bit and figure out how to get past that. And that's really hard. Like, as a parent, it's really hard to do that.
I think, yeah, what it stems out of is putting trust back in your child. And they see it, too. I mean, they do. I don't think, you know, if you're, you know, making a lunch for your child every day, for your high schooler every day, that they're like, man, he doesn't trust me to make my own lunch. You know, I don't think that's what their natural conclusion is going to. But I think the more that you give them experiences to take ownership of, the more that they can begin to trust themselves too. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you know what? If I sleep past my alarm, I remember the first time my dad didn't wake me up and I had to set my own alarm. I was like, if I don't wake up, I am missing school. And I am going to have to, you know, rue the consequences from my parents of missing school. Why did you miss? All these different things. And so it's also giving them the responsibility and then also letting them fail if they do, which is tough. It is. You don't want to see your child fail. But I think what that's teaching them is they trust me enough to let me fail on my own. And let them know that they're not alone, that at the end of the day, you are there and you will help them out of any situation that they find themselves in. But know that step by step, it's reinforcing this idea that I can do it. I could do it. And I think what you're communicating to them, whether you know it or not, by controlling everything and wanting to do it for them is that I can't do it without somebody else with me or doing it for me. And that's something that I think, you know, my parents did well. I fall into that timeline of after 1995. I was born in 99. And I think looking back, like, you know, they did well. And my parents will, you know, speak honestly of like, man, we, you know, it's crazy that we gave you access to technology. We didn't understand it either. And it was just unfettered, unrestricted access to it. That's insane. But there's certain things that I think as I've reached adulthood, small things, going to the doctor, doing my taxes. My dad, I think I've shared this before, but it's a great story. My dad texted me my first year in adulthood after the tax deadline and said, have you done your taxes? And I was like, oops, forgot about that. I was just so used to having somebody remind me and having someone there. And I think there's certain things that I get anxious about, even small things like calling somebody. Calling to make a reservation somewhere, calling as a student minister or a retreat center and say, hey, can we book this? Because it's something that I have always had people do for me or haven't been forced to do. But I think on the other side of it, I get to it. And the more that I do it, the more that I can trust myself and say, you know what, when this comes up next time, I know I can do it because I've done it.
Right. Well, and that's what's so interesting as we're about to kind of talk through some practical advice from the book. Caleb hasn't read the book, but no. Falls from experience in this anxious generation. I'm on like the tail end of millennials. And so I had some technology, but I didn't have a smartphone until college. I enjoyed the book. I wouldn't say it was perfect, but I really liked it. I think it's worth reading. Tobin read it and did not like it. And so we're going to come from some different perspectives, which that doesn't mean you can't take nuggets from the book. But I think me and Tobin had different experiences with this book.
Yeah. You know, I get really dismissive about books that are doom and gloom. And that's the way I read this is, and don't get me wrong, there are so many things that are scary and wrong about this stuff, but also like, I need somebody to say, here's how we can kind of get past this and stuff. And I didn't feel like there was enough of that. It was more of a, here's how we screwed up. Okay. Sorry. See you later. Like that's the way I read it at least. But a lot of this is, in the book, it talks about this is to delay or limit smartphones and social media, especially for younger teens. Sometimes that's not doable. In my case, it wasn't like because of my kid being at home because of COVID and not having a home phone. And just in general, as a parent of a first time parent of a teen, there are so many things that unfortunately for his younger siblings, they're going to get a lot stricter rules because I'm learning. Like I there are things that I'm like, man, I should have done that differently, or we should have done that instead of this. And so just delaying and limiting smartphones is their biggest thing. And I agree with that.
Well, I think he says in the book, no smartphones before high school would be his recommendation, and no social media before 16. And I think he probably even says, if you can wait even longer, that's great. But those are his, like, I stand on this. These are my recommendations for teenagers. And then with that, replacing digital hours with offline community. So that looks like sports, clubs, youth group, give them a part-time job. Maybe it's a group, like if you're a teacher listening or a school person, give group projects and assignments that have to be done offline that aren't done virtually. Like, hey, you have to get together in person and meet, and that's part of the assignment. And I'm going to ask everyone if you showed up. Give them things like that that force them to be together. His other recommendations under this are phone-free schools, which in Texas we're seeing right now. That's a forced thing.
Law, yeah.
Right. More unsupervised play. And so I thought this was so interesting, and I need to do this more with my kids. Don't give them rules. Let them figure it out. Like, there are certain things that you don't need to get in the middle of and try to be the buffer. They have to learn conflict resolution. And the only way that's learned is by practice. And I think so many times parents, for example, my kid's school, they have a Gaga pit, and like teachers, there were arguments. And so they wrote up like here are the rules. Here's when it's out. Here's how you have to get it. Like, they wrote every single thing that they could think of that was going to cause an argument, and they made a rule for it to get in front of the argument. But I think Jonathan Haidt would say, no, don't do that. Let them struggle. Put them in there and let them figure it out. And you can be there in case something gets extreme, but we can't protect our kids from everything. And so that unsupervised, unstructured time, I think our kids' lives are almost overstructured, or there's always something going on. If they don't have anything to do, they're sitting in front of the TV. There's just very little quiet and boredom that happens anymore.
I mean, I think that's something across the board that we'll see, that just the noises surrounding. They just always have been had an outlet that if I'm confronted with something uncomfortable, if I am bored, I can always have an outlet. Uh-huh. And I think it's okay to teach them to be bored. I know students who, you know, will listen to music in the shower, right? You know, somewhat normal. I have students who will watch YouTube or movies in the shower. And have shared this information with me. I was like, this is crazy. But it's this thing that's a place normally where you haven't been able to have access to anything, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you are the shower thoughts are a thing for a reason, because you're just alone in silence. And we found a way to fill the void with noise. And I think, it's just what that does to your brain of just always going without having a chance to decompress is just not okay. There's this YouTube video of this guy my age who locked his phone away, his smartphone, for a month. And he just kind of documents his experience. And he's like, I was less anxious. He was like, I was more excited to hang out with friends. He got a landline and gave his friends the landline number. And he was like, even just going from text to phone or to a phone call, like, I was able to hear my friend's voice and hear how excited they were to see me, to hang out with me, versus a text I can write off and just be like, you know what? I don't really, I'm tired. I don't want to go. But hearing their excitement made me excited. And I think in small ways, we've cut off this human connection, even in ways from going from voice to text, in a way that you can't hear and experience the emotion and excitement in another person in a friend's voice is cutting us off. And so he got to the other side of the month. He was like, I was less connected, which I thought was going to make me anxious. And about a week or two in, I was better. I was less anxious. I was okay sitting in silence. And I think now where that was the default, it's something that we have to train. And so
that's good.
I think for parents, it's, you know, there is going to be some pushback. It is going to be uncomfortable, but limiting and being yourself okay with the silence and the boredom, I think it's a challenge for everybody, because it's not just teens who are over-reliant on the noise and the cell phones.
Yeah. It's also important to normalize that anxiety is also a thing that can be healthy. The body's way of practicing stress responses. Like when I was in college and performing a lot with bands and musical ensembles and stuff, I used to tell people that whenever, you know, like before I'd go onto a football field or I'd go on stage, like I used to get like butterflies and like get stressed out. But that also was what made me kind of like amp up my performance, because that's how my body told myself it was kind of like game time. Like I'm sure athletes have the same feeling about stuff, you know, when they're listening to music and stuff, getting ready for games. Like sometimes it's good to use that to your advantage, especially in a performing situation. And so it's okay to have anxiety. We don't want people to shy completely away from that. It's just it's whenever it gets crippling, that's tough. You want to try to avoid that.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and I think it kind of all comes down to, if you're a parent, if you're a teacher, if you're a church worker, however you're interacting with teens, it's okay to let them struggle a little bit. And we can't swoop in to save them. We can't fix everything, but we can be there to coach them through it. So Caleb, like you were talking about, make them set their own alarm. And if they don't get up for school, have a conversation on the back end, but there's a consequence for that. Dude, you miss your ride to school and you're late and you have to deal with the consequences of that action. Or don't always remind them about homework. If you give them deadlines ahead of time, don't be messaging or emailing the night before. Don't forget, here are the things that you have due. Let them start to do that on their own. He encourages, this is something that's, I'll be honest, this is something that's hard for me. He encourages younger kids, so more of my kids' age, send them into a grocery store by themselves and tell them to buy three things. They have to find it, they have to pay for it, and come back out, and you've got to wait for them. But it's building this confidence when they realize, hang on, I just did that. That was hard, or that was something that I've never done before and I did it. And it builds this confidence in a way that you just telling them, hey, you can do this, you're capable, isn't going to accomplish. So little things, let them order at restaurants. If you're still ordering for your teenagers at restaurants, make them do it. Make them go, if something's wrong with it, make them go up to the counter and say, hey, I'm still waiting for this. We used to joke with Caleb all the time that he never wanted to interact with anyone in stores or restaurants. And I think dad used to like start bribing you of...
I would make mom and dad at Chick-fil-A, because you can't get your own refill. I would make them go get my refill for me. I don't want to talk to them. And so they started making me, if you want more Dr. Pepper, go ask for it.
Yeah.
And it was little things like that, it was just so anxious and didn't want to do it if I didn't have to. And I think that's the default for most teenagers. If I don't have to do it, someone's gonna do it for me, awesome. Great.
Yeah. But with that too, make space for boredom, have them unplug. I can't remember if we talked about this in the social media episode. Caleb has talked about the Brick app that can help you kind of force that unplugging. I do think we've talked about that. But make time for, hey, it's okay to be bored, it's okay to be quiet. That's where creativity comes out. I'm trying to do that with more of my younger kids right now. And the things that they're coming up with, the other day, they were playing something that I was like, they never would have done that had they been sitting in front of the TV. Granted, they're destroying my house, but it's worth it for them to learn these skills. And you don't want them learning it for the first time after they graduate high school and are on their own, whether that's college or a job for the very first time. And so I would recommend, whether you hate read it like Tobin or enjoy it like me, maybe audiobook it, to check out The Anxious Generation and just what is going on with our teenagers and how we can support them. But as always, Make sure you subscribe on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll see you next time.